Thanks for being here this morning. We're very excited to present our work. I want to acknowledge many of the people who are here today. We have members in the front of the NIH team and the BU team. We have our colleagues from the Office of Disability Programs at SSA, Jamila Jackson. Dr. Leighton Chan is here. He is our boss at NIH. He's the Chief of Rehab Medicine and the PI on the project, as well as Alan Jetty, who's the PI on the BU side. And Andrew Houghtonville from University of New Hampshire has collaborated with us on one of the analytic projects. So we have good representation of the team here, anticipating, just as Dot said, challenging questions and a lively discussion after all the presentations. So I hope we keep you engaged. So we have the presenters have no financial relationships to disclose. You probably know that SSA administers the largest federal disability programs in the country. In 2012, they'll provide benefits to over 19 million adults and children, totaling $187 billion. They're huge programs. The programs offer important supports that you're also probably aware of, which is income support and access to health care through Medicare and Medicaid, which is critical. The programs are pressured by a rise in applications, so the historically applications have been increasing every year and are now over 3 million a year, so it's not hard to imagine how difficult it is for SSA to manage that kind of a load. They have made several reform efforts, however, they've only been marginally successful, and applicants still may wait months to years for a decision. It was in this context, I should actually go back a minute and say that we've had unprecedented support from SSA. I'll talk about it in the next slide. Oh, going the wrong way. We've had unprecedented support from SSA. So in August of 2007, it was in this context that SSA sought help from the NIH institutes and centers. And they really asked for help identifying new diagnostic tests that would expedite allowances, diagnostic tests that would allow them to identify people with disabilities. So the paradigm was one of disability related to a diagnosis or impairment that prevented work. And we suggested that more contemporary models of disability, along with newer assessment methods for assessing function, might be useful. So we entered into an interagency agreement in 2008. It's a seven-year agreement that actually brings funding into the intramural side of NIH. So over the seven-year period of the interagency agreement, it will be about $10 million worth of funding. So it's significant support. So what I started to say a moment ago is SSA has really given us unprecedented support in this project. We have a huge volume of data that I'll talk about in a minute. We have access to claimants for critical portions of the project. And SSA has really been strategic in their political support of the project within the agency, which has really been helpful. So we're quite grateful to be doing this work with SSA. Can't seem to get my directions correct. So there are two main objectives of the project. The first is data analysis, and I mentioned that we've been given an unprecedented amount of data. We have 10 years worth of claims data representing about 30 million claims. So sample size is rarely an issue for us. It's actually a nice thing. We perform data analysis in order to develop systematic analytic methods to help inform SSA's decision-making processes. The second, and you'll hear about both of these objectives today. So the last presentation of the day, we'll be talking about one of the systematic methods we developed. And the other two presentations will be talking about computer adaptive testing. And this is, you may be familiar with it and you'll hear more about it later. It's a form of intelligent software, essentially. It's been used in education for a long time and has been applied more recently to assess functioning in a comprehensive, reliable, rapid way. So we're suggesting this type of method to better assess claimants' functioning. The first approach, data analysis, is more of a short-term goal. We can provide SSA with actionable recommendations right away. The computer adaptive testing is a more long-term process because it takes quite a period of time to develop all the various assessments for each domain. So our conceptual framework is steeped in the International Classification of Functioning developed by the World Health Organization. So essentially, it's our view that SSA tends to focus their assessment on health conditions and impairments at the body structure function level in order to predict participation, that is work. However, we know that newer concepts of disability view it as the outcome of the interaction between individuals' capabilities and environmental demands. In other words, the gap between individual capabilities and, in this instance, work demands. And so we suggest that SSA measure activities at the whole person level in the context of workplace demands and in the context of other important home and community and environmental issues in order to better predict work. So we're really asking them to make a shift in paradigm. By the way, after each graph, there are text slides I'm going to skip. They're for people using screen readers, so they're there if you need them, but I'm going to skip those slides. So in order to really determine if SSA was collecting data on functioning comprehensively in order to understand what kind of information they were collecting, we decided to examine their data collection efforts in a systematic way. And we particularly focused on the listing of impairments and the forms SSA uses as part of the disability evaluation process. So the listing of impairments was initiated in the 1950s. It was developed as a screening tool to expedite awards. It's one of actually several expedited programs that SSA has implemented to try to speed up determinations. It identifies adults with impairments that are severe enough to prevent substantial gainful activity. So the listings have been updated over time, and it's you'll see kind of the effect of some of that in the data we'll show you. SSA also collects quite a number of forms, and we reviewed all of those forms, specifically focusing on the ones that included information on functioning that we could actually code. So we focused on 11 different forms, and the forms that weren't included in our assessment were forms that just simply didn't collect information on functioning. So we used the ICF to code function, and we chose the ICF because it's the most widely accepted and comprehensive classification of functioning that currently exists. We know it has, you know, some issues, but it's the best we have to date, and so that's what we chose to use. We evaluated both the listings and the SSA data collection forms for inclusiveness of functional domains by coding each term or question using ICF codes. We used a manual parsing method whereby a trained individual identifies and interprets the phrases of interest relative to the ICF code. So it's quite labor intensive. Diane can attest to it. She did the coding. So each phrase is assigned as many codes as is required to fully describe the text. So some phrases have multiple codes. We did not use qualifiers because it did not seem appropriate for this particular activity. We had to include a non-ICF category, actually diagnosis, because the listings heavily refer in some cases to conditions, not to components of the ICF. So we added that so that we could capture that information. And then to characterize domain coverage, we simply counted the number of times each domain was included and calculated percent coverage. So our overall conceptual approach that I started to describe to you earlier when I showed the slide of the ICF, that you know we think that SSA sort of needs to shift their focus toward individual capabilities in the context of workplace demands. That conceptual approach is described in this journal article that recently came out in the Journal of Disability Policy Studies. And here's some of the data just examining the content according to functioning of the information that SSA collects. So on the y-axis is the percent of ICF coverage. On the x-axis are the various forms. the graph represents out of all the possible three-digit ICF codes, so if you were to add up all the three-digit codes for body structure, body function, activity and participation, and environment, out of all those codes, the proportion in each of the major ICF domains for each form. Hopefully I explained that clearly. So what you can see is that I marked two of the forms. This form and this form are the mental and physical residual functional capacity forms. So those are forms that are actually meant to capture residual functional capacity, you know, what people are able to do relative to work. And you can see that those forms capture, D is the activity, and I lost my little marker, there we go. The D codes, the green on the slide, are the activity and participation domain, and it's not well represented on the forms that are actually intended to capture functioning. You can see that on the two forms, lost my cursor, there we go. On the two forms that have a fair amount of information on in the activity domain, those are optional forms. People don't have to complete them. So that's problematic. Some of the codes that were omitted from SSA's data collection in the forms were watching, listening, purposeful sensing, copying, rehearsing, learning to read, learning to write, calculating, acquiring skills, solving problems. I think you'd all agree that these are pretty important skills potentially relative to work. So these types of functional activities aren't captured. Now if we look at the listings, which are essentially criteria by which people can, you know, make it in through this expedited screening process, the listings are organized by body system. So one, for instance, is musculoskeletal, 12, for instance, are mental disorders. What you can see, again, the green is our activity and participation. You can see that there's a really uneven coverage of activity and participation in the various domains. So SSA's worked very hard to capture characteristics of mental functioning because their constituency over time in that area has grown and grown. So it's now one of the top two populations of people that apply for benefits. So they needed a better way to evaluate mental health, and so they've, you know, really worked hard to include functioning in this body system. But you'll see that other body systems have little to no activity captured whatsoever. So there's this really an uneven coverage of functioning in the listings. So, as I mentioned a moment ago, the ICF is really the best tool we have at this time to classify functioning, and it allowed us to examine SSA's data in a systematic way for gaps in content coverage, so that was a good thing. The ICF hasn't been empirically tested, so we actually don't know whether all important subdomains of functioning are captured by the ICF or represented, and we also don't know if subdomains overlap. There seems to be, so by our assessment, there seems to be a bias in SSA's data collection toward diagnosis and impairment. And we feel that domains of functioning that might best inform decisions about work capacity, such as activities at the whole person level and environment, work context, aren't well represented in the information they collect. And as I mentioned, there's wide variation in the degree to which domains are included across both listings and forms. We don't really know the effect of this variation, but we think it merits consideration as a potential source of inconsistency in determination outcomes. And we do know that important gaps exist in content coverage relative to the ability to work. So as I mentioned, no forms capture purposeful sensory experience. More importantly, there's really limited information captured on learning and applying knowledge, important for work, general tasks and demands, which includes multitasking, also important for work, communication, seriously important for work, and interpersonal interactions and relationships, you know, things that are really essential. So we suggest that more comprehensive assessment of function at the whole person level, examining the context of workplace demands and other important features of the home and community environment, may better predict work capacity. And that in order to do this, SSA really needs assessments that are rapid, easy to administer, and reliable because of the number of cases they adjudicate every year. So the talks you'll hear next will present these rapid assessment methods to you, our work done to date. And the last presentation of the day will present to you one of our systematic analytic approaches. So thanks for listening, and I'll give the floor to our next speaker.
Thank you.